It's time for Windows Weekly. Yes, I'm back. Thank you, Mike Elgin, for filling in. Paul Zlorot and Mary Jo Foley are here as well. We'll discuss the latest about Windows 10. Kevin Turner's interesting statement that Microsoft's found a new way to make money on Windows. We don't know what that is. And we'll answer some questions from the Twitter. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and if you'd like to help us design our new website, I invite you to visit twit.to/navtest. We've got 8 quick questions we'd like to ask you that will help us make the navigation easier to use. That's twit.to/navtest. Thanks a lot. This is Windows Weekly, episode 392, recorded December 10th, 2014. Building Fort Kickass. Windows Weekly is brought to you by IT Pro TV. A good IT pro is always learning, and IT Pro TV is the resource to keep your skills and knowledge up to date. IT Pro TV offers engaging courses streamed to your Roku, computer, or mobile device. For a free 7-day trial and 30% off the lifetime of your account, go to itpro.tv/ww and use the code WW30. And by ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter makes hiring faster, easier, and cheaper. Post your job to 50-plus job boards with one click. Try ZipRecruiter with a free 4-day trial right now at ZipRecruiter.com/windows. That's ZipRecruiter.com/windows. And by NatureBox. NatureBox ships great-tasting snacks right to your door. Start snacking smarter with wholesome, delicious treats like lemon tea biscuits. To get your complimentary NatureBox sampler, visit naturebox.com/twit. That's naturebox.com/twit. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we talk about the latest Microsoft stuff. I'm back, baby. Thanks to Mike Elgin for filling in last week. I was a little under the weather. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, though, they are always here, whether or not. Paul Thurrott from the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com. Mary Jo Foley from ZDNet, allaboutmicrosoft.com.
That was like a little play on words, by the way.
What's that?
You're under the weather and we're here, whether or not. I mean, that's...
Yeah. No, I'm sophisticated that way.
That's pretty good. I mean, it took me like 10 seconds to get it, but...
We lost Paul for 10 seconds. He just went...
Yeah, I didn't actually... It wasn't my video pausing for once. It was literally me brain freezing.
Now we got a big storm. You just had your nor'easter, right? And it's snowing in New York right now.
It is.
But we're apparently going to get a very big storm tonight. So
good luck.
If for some reason you don't hear from the Twit Brick House for a few days, that's why.
Weird. Good thing it's made of brick and not straw like that last house you had.
I blew it right over. More concerning is flooding, because apparently the entire town of Petaluma is on marshland. The basement of this building, and by the way, it's very rare to have basements in California, but this building has a basement, and apparently this building's basement is prone occasionally to flooding. There were rumors, and I've never been able to confirm them, that all of the older buildings like this one in town had tunnels that led down to the river. This was a furniture factory in the late 19th century, and the premise was that they could bring the furniture right down to the boats via the tunnels. But we've never confirmed that. Although, I haven't seen Father Robert Ballester in about 3 days, so it could be
he's down there in the tunnels.
Did I miss anything? Last week was kind of slow, right? Nothing much happened.
Yeah, it's been slow.
All right. We're still working on Windows 10. Did they push an update or anything? Anything to say about that? Guess not. Okay. We're going to take some Twitter questions later and on.
What's happening?
I did like that article, interview with Kevin Turner. I thought that was interesting. He said we're going to have to find new ways to make money on Windows. What does that mean?
If only we knew, right? He said, we're going to hear more about the new business model that Microsoft has for Windows 10 in the early part of next year. But he definitely was hinting around about the fact that attached services are going to be how they think they can make money in a world where Windows increasingly is being given away for free. So that's not attached. New to us, because we've kind of been saying this for a while now, that they're looking at things like OneNote and Xbox Live and Office 365 as the attached services where they kind of hook you in and make money from you going forward.
Yeah.
But a lot of people seem to find this like surprising, I guess, or they misinterpreted his remarks as Windows is going to be the service, which
thank you.
If you read his comments, he didn't say that.
Right. I was just going to comment on that. I think I read what you wrote, and I wrote my own thing, obviously. And I like you, you kind of parse what he says. And he never suggests Windows as a subscription service. He very clearly says we don't accept the fact that Windows is going to be a loss leader, although right. I actually think they get to that point, frankly, directly, you know, directly as a loss leader, whereas they're going to make money indirectly elsewhere. But yeah, I mean, he doesn't really say what it is. He says that sometime next year they'll reveal what their plan is. You know, we have a plan and we're going to talk about that plan. We're just not going to talk about that plan today.
Yeah.
And as you point out, Mary Jo, it's been apparent from their moves all year that this is where they're going. Giving away stuff, trying as hard as they can to get people signed up for things like Azure.
Open sourcing stuff.
Yeah,
releasing it on iOS. Yeah. I mean, there's all kinds of crazy things they're doing now.
But it's progressively cross-platform, which means Windows is no longer the center of the universe. All of these things.
Yeah. You know, the one thing I didn't write up yet, I meant to do this, is I think it's pretty clear that the $0 low-cost Windows licensing thing has worked in the sense that we've seen a renewed interest in not just low-priced Windows machines, but high quality, low priced Windows machines, which has been kind of surprising.
Right.
The thing that hasn't worked, and this is related to this, and I'm surprised this hasn't gotten more attention, is before they announced that, they announced that they had signed on a bunch of Windows Phone partners. And we now know that that was because Windows Phone will now be free. Man, we really haven't seen a lot of new Windows phones, have we? You know, we've seen a few.
Well, in the third world, though, we have, haven't we?
But not
we've
no,
seen
not
more
really.
There.
You know,
but still not the explosion one might have expected. And
you
I
know
think
what?
That
I think they're probably waiting for the next version of Windows Phone OS, though, too, right? Because it's going to be pretty different in terms of what's underneath, as far as we know. It's going to have the Windows 10 core, for one thing. So if you're an OEM, are you going to roll something out now? Or are you going to say, you know what? They're going to put this build out pretty soon of Windows Phone 10. Maybe I should wait.
Well, I wonder, though, that Microsoft wouldn't incent them to do that, if only because the more time that goes by, the worse of a problem this is, you know, for Windows Phone. I mean, we're not exactly clawing our way back here. So this time next year, it's going to be even worse. And I just don't see anything on the horizon. I mean, Windows 10, obviously, but, you know, it's too bad. I mean, even Microsoft itself. You know, one of the big issues is the lack of a flagship phone of any kind and no real concrete news about a new one. You know, the ecosystem needs a little jump start. And I really felt like by this time, you know, at the end of the year, we would be able to look back and say, wow, look how this really made a difference. But it really hasn't. You know, we see those Windows Phone usage statistics every month. Nokia is 95% of the market still, or, you know, Microsoft/Nokia of the Windows Phone market. You don't see Blue making headway or any of these companies that have come into India or in Asia really are making any headway at all. It's just, it's really kind of remained static. That's too bad.
On the other hand, I think their cross-platform strategy is working. Their cloud strategy is working. I mean, how important is phone?
To me?
Well, I know to everything. You, but seriously, couldn't Microsoft just at some point, and in fact, I think this is likely, just say, well, it was a nice try, guys. We're gonna abandon that phone thing.
You just stabbed me right in the heart.
I know. No, I don't.
But, well, I know it would be bad for your books, but, I mean, seriously.
Yeah, well, yeah, I'm not retiring on the Windows Phone book anytime soon.
Is there some reason Microsoft has to keep doing phones?
Well, I you know, Mary Jo, I think, has seen some of this, and actually, I didn't write much about this either. One of the things I caught in Kevin Turner's speech in the written version, I didn't listen to it, I just read it, was he commingled phone and tablet in the same way that he commingled laptop and desktop PCs. When he talks about Windows 10 as a shared platform across phone and tablet, PCs of all kinds, Xbox, you know, embedded devices as well. Phone and tablet to him are the same thing. And I think that's Microsoft's strategy going forward. And when you look at Windows, big Windows, I mean, I think likewise, the part of that that's struggling is the tablet part. The tablet part is a mess. In fact, it's kind of a mess in even bigger ways than phone is. So those two things being together, I think, is good from a platform perspective because it makes sense that those things would be the same. In the same way that it makes sense for the iPhone and iPad to be the same OS, or an Android phone and a Nexus tablet to be the same, or whatever.
And we know with Windows 10, I mean, we're pretty sure with Windows 10 they are going to be one thing, right? That's going to be one SKU. So if you know, at least smaller tablets, whether they're ARM-based or Intel-based, they're going to run the same SKU of Windows as Windows Phone does with Windows 10. So
yeah, and I think that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. And it's probably going to look and feel more like Windows Phone, even on those tablets. And then they have this other thing. They have this other thing that is Windows 10 that's being tested right now by you brave technical preview users. And crazy, brave, I don't know. But that's kind of a different thing, right? That's a thing that has a desktop. And that is something that's more familiar to people who use desktop PCs. The thing that they're going to build for the small tablets and the phones isn't going to have a desktop, we believe. And that's going to be something very different. It'll look like Windows Phone OS, but it will be very different from the other Windows. So like big Windows, small Windows, or whatever we end up.
Or mobile. Well, I guess you can't say mobile because the Surface is a mobile device.
They might. You know what? The rumor is they might call that Windows Mobile.
A name that will live in infamy.
Forever.
Well, actually, to be fair to Windows Mobile, or maybe I'm just being unfair to other products, Microsoft has let other things tank enough that Windows Mobile doesn't actually sound all that horrible anymore.
It doesn't. It's like, oh, yeah, you know, I remember that.
It's comparatively speaking, it's not that bad. I think the name Windows Mobile is fine.
Is there any compelling reason to keep a thing called a Windows Phone around? And, you know, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with Windows Phone. People say, oh, Windows Phone's great. I'm not saying that. Maybe it's just time to say, hey, this is not a market we're going to win in.
Well, we could sort of debate whether Windows Phone can or cannot ever be successful in a marketplace and all that kind of stuff. But I do think there's kind of an end-to-end end-to-end solution that Microsoft can offer to developers and thus also to users, where it's easier to target all of these things on a single platform, and that it makes sense from that perspective. And so there are always going to be businesses that will want to go in that direction.
Okay.
And so that we think of it now as
so there is a there's a compelling market because businesses want an end-to-end solution.
Well, and remember, when you commingle phone and tablet, right? You're really talking about this one system. It may be that the minority percentage of those people are actually picking the thing up, putting it to the air, and making a phone call, because only some of them will have that capability.
Or even care.
Today, we call that thing Windows Phone. Tomorrow, it's, you know, Windows Mobile or just Windows, whatever. It may never catch up. Maybe a year from now, we'll see bigger changes in those new markets, emerging markets. Maybe there'll be some difference will have occurred. I frankly, when they announced all those partners at the beginning of the year, thought we were going to see some movement there before the end of this calendar year. And
Microsoft, we don't want OEMs are telling Microsoft, we don't want to make them. We're not going to, you know, maybe it makes sense for you, an end-to-end solution, to have such a platform, but we don't see a business there. So we're not going to make them.
Signed on all those Windows Phone partners that Paul mentioned. So there are people out there who think they can make them. And then, you know, the fact that Microsoft just bought Nokia and owns a phone hardware making company means to me they're going to at least give it a try. And they're going to, because they didn't dump all Nokia employees, and they dumped about half, when they bought them. But I don't know how long they're going to keep trying. That's the question to me, because Satya Nadella is being pretty clear in that he's not going to let businesses inside Microsoft that are not making money stick around. He's showing that already. And so, you know, when does he say the cutoff comes? Is it if they aren't over 3% next year, is it time to say, you know what, we're not going to stay here in this space?
Yeah.
Or is it going to be in 2 years or 4 years? Sure. I don't know.
There's also this notion that, you know, markets naturally consolidate down to one or two major players. And, you know, when it comes to smartphones specifically, one thing I've been observing recently is that, you know, we as technology enthusiasts will tend to discuss and debate features of the operating system itself or the platform. And, you know, Windows Phone does this and iOS is good at this and Android has this and so forth. But I think the way that most people actually use these devices is they obviously sometimes make phone calls and make text messaging and do things like that, but they just run apps. You know, they don't really think about, well, you know, my Windows Phone has this hub system and it's technically superior because you can see all your, you know, yeah. Nobody cares. You know, nobody cares about that stuff. I mean, I care about it, and I know people listening to this probably do too, but the truth is, you know, people are like Instagram, Facebook, Twitter,
right?
You know, Snapchat, whatever they do. They bounce in and out of these things, and that's the mobile experience. And Microsoft was very thoughtful in the creation of Windows Phone. I think they did some really innovative stuff. I just think nobody was listening or cares because the way people use these platforms, it kind of doesn't matter.
Yeah, and you don't have to defend it, and we're not saying there's anything wrong with it. I'm just wondering if there's a market.
Oh, there are things wrong with it, Leo. There are definitely things wrong with it. And there are things right about
it. Didn't Ed Bott just say, "I'm giving up Windows Phone"? I think he did.
That doesn't resonate in any meaningful way. He wasn't exactly a giant Windows Phone supporter from day one or anything. I mean, I think people tend to think of Ed or Tom Warren as like these Windows guys, when in fact they write about technology. You know? That's really not
it's kind of like when Andy Yannacko said, "I'm giving up the iPhone for Android." It was a big story. But
the reality is,
we're tech journalists. We're not tied to a platform.
It's more important, I think, for the big trends in these markets. And the big trends are that Android is winning huge worldwide, and Apple is winning big in the United States. You know, and you just can't avoid that stuff. And when I look at Microsoft, I think, well, what would be the best way for them to spend money on mobile? You could argue that, maybe it isn't on Windows Phone. You know, maybe it's getting high quality apps, you know, getting their Microsoft experiences on these other platforms, because like I said, the platforms kind of don't matter. And if your workplace is forcing you to choose between iPhone or Android, well, good news. Microsoft's apps have never been better on those platforms.
And it seems to me, that's what I'm kind of seeing.
Yeah.
It seems to me Microsoft has absolutely hedged its bet.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
They have.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. The thing that's going to be really interesting is next year when we see the Windows Mobile preview around late January, we think, when they show it off to us, Windows 10 Mobile preview. Is there anything in that that makes Windows better as a platform for those apps than Android or iOS? If the answer is no, then there's really no reason to go on Windows. If the answer is yes, and they've done something that you can't do on Android or you can't do on iOS, then maybe you see, okay, that's why I want Windows Mobile instead of those. Right now, we don't have that answer. We don't know what is better for Windows.
Right.
Which is crazy. It's crazy we don't know that, but that's the new Microsoft right now.
Yep. Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I only bring it up to say,
I've been doing psychological therapy for people for the past year, and I'm sure this will continue into the future, because, you know, at some point you just have to wake up and say, you know what, look, either because you have to or because of circumstances beyond your control, you're going to use Android, you're going to use iOS, and still lose sleep over that. I mean, personally, again, as a technology enthusiast, like, I really do care about the stuff that Microsoft did and is doing in Windows Phone, but pragmatically, for whatever audience there is listening and reading my stuff, I mean, I think this is not something to get in a bunch over.
I mean, and so there's a couple of cases you can make. Mary Jo made one, which is that many businesses want end-to-end solutions, which would include a mobile device, mobile phone. There are research areas like Cortana where a phone makes the most sense. If you're all in on Cortana, well, you might want to continue to do a phone device, even if it's adopted in a small number of places, because the data you get from that, the information you get from that, can then be extended to other platforms. There is a large developing world that doesn't have a prejudice, Android or iOS, yet, that perhaps they could win in. Although I don't see that as a big profit center or, you know, a big business. And it's how expensive is it for them to continue to make Windows Phone? Let's ask that question.
Yeah. How expensive is it for them to get rid of it? You know,
right. I know. I mean, they'd
have to write off the Nokia.
Well, how much do they spend on Nokia? You know,
yeah,
how
they'd
much
have to write that off? Although a write off is not a bad thing to have.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to write off or even write down that unless they get a band in the market. Right now, what they did was they paid the integration costs of actually acquiring Nokia, which what was it, $8 billion?
But just because the decision was made to acquire Nokia, I don't think Satya Nadella wants his hands tied because that happened.
Right, right. In fact, you know, there were a lot of rumors through Bloomberg that he voted against it when it was up for the vote. Right.
I don't know how these corporate governance things work, but I don't know. Is it impossible for him to go to the board and say, I'd like to get rid of Nokia or I'd like to write it down? I'd like to get rid of Windows Phone. Would the board say, well, no, we spent too much money for it? You know.
Well, by the way, the board is, it's not so much just the board, you know, we spent so much. The board is also the board that elected to buy it, right?
Yeah.
So they had reasons for that. And you know, like we've been talking, I really think the future of this thing is not something we think of as phone. It's mobile.
Yeah.
And part of that is some of those devices will take, you know, will let you make phone calls. You know, maybe just that differentiation is what allows this thing to continue, and that this metro modern whatever stuff that they created for Windows Phone and for Windows, you know, Windows 8, continues as their mobile play.
Right.
It just mobile general touch, multi-touch, you know, tiles and all that kind of gunk.
Is it similar to the conversation of why not spin off Xbox? Not really.
No. No.
Because Xbox has no position in the enterprise.
Is that... It's got no reason to live, Leo. But we love it so.
So it's not an important strategic part of Microsoft. Whereas you could make the case that
it's
a business.
It's their one cool consumer product. It's the one product they have that's got that Apple-like fan base. You know.
Yeah, but does Microsoft really need to be cool with that consumer group?
They really want to be cool, Leo.
They want to be. So do
God,
I.
They want to be cool.
But sometimes you have to acknowledge.
Yeah,
it ain't gonna happen.
Yeah,
and you
my
know,
daughter reminds
when
me
they...
of that all the time.
Dad, you can want to be cool, but that doesn't make you cool.
No, wait, remember
you think you're so
they
funny.
Said when they said the new mantra for the company is productivity and platforms. They said, yeah, we're still in making of hardware, Xbox and Windows Phone and Surface, but those things are meant to showcase what we have for apps and services and. I mean, they are really downplaying now their hardware business, I have to say. They're not ready to say we're not in hardware, but now it's kind of a supporting thing instead of a star, as it was with Steve Ballmer there. Mm-hmm. It's a very different emphasis now.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
I mean, the next, like we said this last year too, you know, the next year is going to be really interesting. I mean, it just is. things are changing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's going to be some kicking and screaming, and we're going to go down some false starts, and that's what happens. It's interesting, at least.
We were supposed to be talking about Windows 10 in this segment of the show.
I know. We kind of, like, got off the track.
It's my fault, and I apologize.
Nope.
But
another round, please.
Well, it's because of Kevin Turner's comments, right? That's where that's where we started.
Well, this is like when Julie Larson Green used to get up on stage in different places, and then who was her successor, her co-partner there?
Tammy Reller.
Same thing. You're always interested to have these people get up and talk because they're outside of their little cocoon, and sometimes they say a few things that are a little revealing, and you look for little bits that give us hints about the future.
Right.
And he was very explicit when he said, you know, we are changing the pricing model for Windows. I'm not telling you what that is today. You know, so sometime in 2015, he'll talk about that. Yeah. Don't think it's going to be a Windows 365, but
let's take a break. No. We have more to talk about with Windows 10. We'll do that. Mm-hmm. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley, Windows Weekly. We are talking Microsoft and obsessive detail. That's what this show's all about. I love it. No, really. Where else? You know, we talk about things no one else even thinks about. You know, okay, maybe the louder milks, but like,
how dare you, sir?
Maybe those guys. but seriously, that's why, you know, the mainstream press is, what did Turner just say? And you guys are going, well,
except maybe the louder milks. That's what you thought.
With the exception of the louder milks.
With the exception of those two guys.
Nobody else cares.
That's good.
Our show today brought to you by IT Pro TV. If you are looking to polish up your IT skills to get better at your job or maybe to get a job in IT, this is a great place to do it. If you like watching, if you liked watching tech TV, if you like watching Twit, if you like the idea of absorbing the IT information via this medium, IT Pro TV is such a great solution for you. In fact, Tim and Don, the founders of IT Pro TV, were inspired by those platforms to make something that was fun, easy to watch, a way you could learn IT without even kind of thinking about it. I want you to visit itpro.tv/ww and find out more about what they do. It is pretty amazing. You can watch live broadcast 30 hours a week, very much like us. Welcome, Windows Weekly fans, it says. If you want to use the offer code WW30, you're going to save 30% off on your account, off your subscription. And that's going to be for the life of your account. If you look at IT, there's Tim. If you look at Tim Brim, the one of the founders. If you look at IT Pro TV, there's Don Pezet, the other guy, the other founder. And if you look at IT Pro TV, you'll see. Oh, it looks like Twitter. It's fun. It's engaging. They have a chat room going on in the background. They have content. Well, let me go to the episode library. Actually, we can watch that video later. If content in every arena, Microsoft, more of our courses are for Microsoft than any other single vendor, they say. So if you're working in an environment where you have to support Microsoft, IT Pro TV has the content you need. If you're in security, that's going to be part of your job nowadays, no matter what. Adam Gordon, who's one of the best, teaches the ISC Squared courses, Cisco courses, CompTIA, if you want to get A+, Strata, Linux, Security Plus, Project Management, PMI. They've got certifications for project management. Apple. This is something new they've started to add, and I'm really happy about this. Apple certified Macintosh technician. And they have more stuff on Office than you can shake a stick at. I love the virtual machines. If you say, well, I want to learn, you know, how to configure and run servers. You don't even have to have Windows Server. If you have an HTML5 browser on any platform, you can literally set up the lab and watch. You want a Windows client, a web client? I'm going to do it because I'm on a Mac, believe it or not. And now here I'm going to have Windows Server running, and I can have up to three virtual machines. I can screw it up as bad as I want. And I could just never mind and cancel out of it. But this is a great way to learn. A great way to learn. The Measure Up practice exams included with your subscription. This is all part of your subscription. Look, there's Windows Server 2012 R2. Let's do a little PowerShell programming. What do you say? I love this. You get the Measure Up practice exams were $79. If you subscribe for a year at a time, which I recommend, you're going to get all of the episodes downloadable DRM free, video or audio, so you can watch it on your device even in the airport or on the airplane and so forth. It is really an incredible deal. Let's exit out of this demo. Discard current scene. It was just that easy. Discard current sessions. I'm a big fan of Windows, or rather IT Pro TV and Windows learning there And I know you will be too. Watch it on your Roku, your computer, your tablet. Yeah, they got a Roku channel. Get the subscription right now. Go to itpro.tv/WW. The code WW30 will save you 30% off for the life of your account, and you get free 7-day trial. And once you reach your 13th month, this is something they're doing to celebrate their anniversary. Once you reach your 13th month, they're going to reduce your subscription rate even further. This is something Tim and Don are really great. Something they offered. Just nobody asked. They just said, you know what? We're gonna. If you've been with us for a year, we're going to bring your cost down to $24.95 a month. $250 for the entire year. Offer code WW30 gets it down to about, about $40 a month. $400 a year. That's less than one of those big prep books, and it's certainly a lot less than going to a technical school. You visit itpro.tv/WW, offer code WW30. I know a lot of you are in IT. You want to polish your skills and even more want to get a better job. This is the way to do it. These skills are really valuable. itpro.tv/WW. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley, Windows Weekly. We're talking about Microsoft and the latest. How is the Windows 10 preview? I don't understand what they did. They said Office. What happened there? Office doesn't work.
Leo, this is exactly what we're asking ourselves. What happened there? I mean, this latest build has been horribly buggy, as you probably recall.
They said uninstall Office?
Well, the initial upfront advice was they've released several patches for this build. And they're doing this in part because they've said we're not coming up with a new build until next year. And so they know people are going to be using it. They want to keep them up to date and so forth. So as part of Patch Tuesday, one of the three updates for the technical preview is a security patch. In certain configurations, you would have to uninstall Office before it will install successfully.
Oh, okay.
Install the patch, reinstall Office.
Oh, that's not a big deal. Office still works.
It's actually not a huge deal to ask if people are technical enough to beta test software.
This is the technical. Exactly.
But after warning everyone about this, they also came back and said, hey, by the way, try this first. Just install one of the three patches, reboot, and then install the other two. And if it works, you don't have to worry about it.
Nice.
Most of the people that I've heard from have said that works fine.
Oh.
So that hasn't been horrible.
Fear not.
But just the way they announced it, it was like, here we go again. We're never going to escape this build.
I got to tell you, though, if you're doing the technical preview, The real problem is that Microsoft opens this up to everybody, and people just think, oh, hey, a free version of Windows 10.
Mm-hmm.
This is not for, the faint of heart. This is normal stuff that's happening. They're testing it.
It's an alpha.
It's not even a beta.
It's not even a beta.
It's an alpha.
People are just not used to this, right?
Right.
I think people forget, because the way that Microsoft doled this out in the past was you got a build. You waited a few more months, you get another one, then boom, hey, it's RTM. This is really different. And I think it's hard to kind of wrap your head around that at the beginning.
And don't raise a ruckus, kids, because this is great. Microsoft's doing this. Just don't be dumb. Understand. Don't put this on your production machine.
Two things.
Expect hassles. Go ahead, Paul.
First of all, in the distant past, Microsoft used to give beta testers a new build every single week.
That's a good point.
You'd be okay.
Yeah.
The other thing is, they had released two very high quality builds. Those things came in fairly rapid succession. When you release a build in whatever that was, early mid November, the expectation is that this won't be the end. But the mistake that they made, I think, was not general bugginess. Who can say? It just happened that way. Whatever. They also dropped two bombs on us that day. One was that, by the way, we're going to break OneDrive forever. Sorry about that. And number two, this is it for the rest of the year, so have fun. And I think the combination of those two things has left a bad taste in many people's mouths. Because, if we go back to from before this build, you may recall that the biggest issue with the technical preview was, hey, you guys have been blah, blah, blahing about all this feedback and everything, but we haven't seen a single new feature added to these builds because of feedback. When's that going to happen? And I don't remember when they added you can remove those two buttons from the taskbar, like a handful of really small things. And that was all they've done for this whole period. So people were already a little burned, by the growing, you know, feeling that they really weren't listening all that well, even though they keep talking about listening. And, you know, and then the build came out. It was terrible quality, which was unusual, you know, given our previous experience. And they killed OneDrive in a very meaningful way. So, you know, it's not, this is just, we're not just complaining to complain. I mean, it's, there's a lot going on here. It's not just, you know, this thing's really, but yeah, I mean, I know what I'm getting into. I've been beta testing software for over 20 years. This is, I'm not, you know, new to the game. I, you know, yeah, if I have to restart Explorer 5 times a day, fine. I can handle that. I'm an adult. I'm just, but.
I think there, you there get it. I think,
oh, yeah, it's not Paul.
No, yeah. I think you get it, but I see so many people going, what? This is so buggy. It's like, right. Wait, it's an
I'm going back to Windows 8 one forever.
The answer to them, Mary Jo, from now on, let's all just do it. Yeah. Duh.
Yeah.
Duh.
Well, I always say, you know, people will say, hey, Paul is, you know, build 9888 good enough for me, you know, is it stable enough for me to use every day?
No.
To which the reply is always, if you need to ask me that question, you have no business installing this. Right. You know, you need to know, go into it with the intestinal fortitude to handle problems and to understand how you set things up so you don't lose any data and you don't lose any anything. You know, that if you have to nuke this thing from space and go back to previous versions or previous version of Windows, whatever, you can handle that. You have to be able to do that.
Yes. Thank you.
And if you can't, I have a little website I've been writing for 15 years. That has, you know,
people just say, well, but it's a free version of Windows.
It is a free version of Windows.
It's a free version of Windows.
Nothing is free, Leo, right? I mean, I think that's the...
Having said that, have you got... have you? I know Mary Jo's not using it, but Paul, you're using it day-to-day, right?
Yeah.
And it's fine, right? I mean, it's relatively fine.
No, this build is terrible, but it's... I mean, I do still use it. Interestingly, I will say, before they released that, I think the original patch for Explorer crashing, I was kind of on the edge. Like, I'm like, okay, I think on my main desktop computer, because I just need to get work done here. Maybe I need to go back to Windows 8.1. And then they released that patch, you know, which surprised me. I still have problems, though. So I don't, you know, I've just resigned myself to this is my lot in life. I'll just deal with it. But, yeah, I mean, I have to, sometimes I actually have to reboot it. You know, mostly I can get into Task Manager, you know, crash the UI and bring it back. But it's frustrating. You have to start closing things. Sometimes... you know, the other thing, you know, the Explorer in Windows is like the bastard son of 1,000 fathers or something. I mean, it's like Internet Explorer and File Explorer are intricately linked, you know, in the OS, which is the most boneheaded decision Microsoft's ever made in its history. That thing, that dates back 15 years. And sometimes just closing Internet Explorer windows will actually fix the File Explorer problems I'm having. So you can see the linkage, you know, between them and that. And it's just hard to deal with. So sometimes I think I'm rebooting because I can't task manage my way out of it. And so I start closing windows. Then all of a sudden everything comes back and it's fine. It's a lot of fun. You should get into beta testing. It's good stuff.
I'm just sitting here thinking, oh, no.
It is fun, but it's alpha testing. And we're going to say that again.
And you have to...
It's alpha testing.
You have to be somebody who likes doing what you're talking about. You know, like, hey, so what? Restart it 5 times. Me, you know, not...
No, it's not for you.
Yeah. No, I see. I get little glimpses of normal life. Like I took my 2-year-old 15-inch Ultrabook. I restored just the other night. And it goes back to Windows 7 because it's that signature PC I bought from the Microsoft store. And my original thing was I was going to take that and upgrade it. And then I got back to Windows 7 and it was all clean and wonderful. And I thought, I'm just going to leave it here, you know? Like, I mean, God help me if I ever need it. But if I do, this thing will work now. And maybe I should just leave it alone. It's the type of thing where,
go ahead.
You know, stuff just works.
It's me in our chat room says, Leo, it's not free. You pay in blood, sweat, and tears.
Yeah.
Mostly tears. Yes. Yes, yes.
Paul Thurrott's Windows, Tablet, and PC Gift Giving Guide. Yes.
Jesus.
Each and every year. We look forward to this moment. You're helping me because, you know, of course, for the next 2 weeks, radio stations are going to call me, the morning guy. Hey, it's Bubba in the Morning from WZZZ here in beautiful Indianapolis. Leo Laporte's on the line with his holiday gift-giving idea. Leo, I want 23 gadgets for a kid under $50.
This is what they want. This article is not like a full gift guide.
Ideas are appreciated.
It's very specific to the PC market. And that thing that's happened this year, I think cynically from the outside, if you didn't look at these machines, you might look at some of these low-cost machines and say, this is netbooks all over again. And I get that. I get why people would say that. But I think the thing that really differentiates these, actually tablets as well too, but mostly the laptops, is that they're not just inexpensive. So they're not just like cheap, right? Which is maybe interesting in its own right. I just noticed the term fork use in the notes. But there's also
the future.
But there's also I'm just thinking that's the type of thing I would write, but I know I didn't write that. Okay.
You're rubbing off on Mary Jo.
I know, he is.
HP, I think, is the one company that's done a really good job about this. There are other good examples out there, and certainly I have other low-cost machines. But between the HP 7 and 8, which are their mini tablets, and the HP Stream 11 and 13, which are their low-end laptops, non-touch-based laptops. You know, we're talking about machines that start at $100 in the case of the tablet, start at $200 in the case of the laptops. And they're actually really nice for what they are. I mean, you're not going to replace a MacBook Air 13-inch, you know, whatever, with an HP Stream 13. But the build quality is nice. The feature set is nice. The available resources are nice. The extras are nice. You know, you get Office 365 Personal. You get Microsoft Store gift card. I mean, they're really good values, you know. And I think I will probably, before the holidays are over, write a similar article about phone, because I think there's some similar value to be had on the phone side. Again, on the low end, because I think this is kind of where the sweet spot is for Windows in general. You know, Microsoft makes a very high-end tablet, like Surface. You know, they're very expensive. And Lenovo sells some high-end stuff like that, and some other companies do too. But I really think the sweet spot for Windows is going to be with the masses. It's going to be with the people that don't have $600 or $800 or $1,500 to spend on a Ultrabook or some super high-end tablet or whatever. I think, you know, this is the sweet spot. And I think, you know, I just have the most experience with HP stuff. But I got that. Remember that company Nextbook, right?
Yeah.
They had made some crazy claim about being, you know, the third biggest provider of tablets in the world or something. And they apparently can justify that. But I just got their little 2-in-1 inch, a 10 point whatever inch tablet with a little clip-on keyboard and everything. And it's under $300. And this is a nice machine. It's the type of thing, like, you pick it up and it feels high quality. It's got nice, it just has a nice feel to it. It's not some cheap piece of plastic you're going to snap over your knee, you know, by mistake because it's so cheaply made. It's really, really nice. And there are machines like that. Acer makes machines like that. You know, there are others as well. But I just happen to have a lot of experience with the HP stuff. So they'll probably be more like that.
I'm seeing lots of positive reviews. I just didn't expect it for the Stream. I just, you know,
no, I didn't
at
either.
That price,
I
mean, you thought, God, this is good. People are just going to say, oh, it's junk.
$200, it's a netbook. You see netbook, you know. Plus,
they
not
say
to
it's not a netbook, right?
No, but that's what I'm saying. It really isn't. Yeah, it really isn't.
That's,
I like it.
Cool.
I mean, it's nice. I use the 13 around the house. It's nice.
This could be huge for HP, although I doubt there's much money in it. I mean, how much profit could there be in a $200 computer?
Well, I talked to the guy that, by the way, Mary Jo must know this guy too, Mike Nash, a former Microsoft guy from way back, runs their consumer PC business. And he was telling me that, you know, they evaluated this business and they said, why don't we just do something that nobody else does and actually make nice devices for, you know, that don't cost $1 million. Yeah. And there's some interesting things that they put into the build, you know, into the build of the devices that make them high quality or make them look nice. It's got that kind of double shot paint effect on the lid that goes around the keyboard and the trackpad. It's that, I think I mentioned my daughter and my wife had come in from wherever one night and I had the HP 11, the Stream 11 open, and both of them gravitated to it and talked about it. And these are people who don't normally care about technology at all, you know? And my wife is using one of these actually on her standing desk upstairs. That's kind of a secondary computer.
Would you, is the 11 okay, or would you get the 13 or the, don't they have a 14
spec
also?
Wise, they are virtually identical.
Okay.
From
so
a
what
core
you're paying for is the screen.
Is the screen, okay. Yeah. There are actually some other differences. You know, one of them has SD versus micro SD expansion, things like that. But basically, they're the same exact device, yeah.
I'm actually tempted to get one.
They're really nice.
Are they? For what's there, like, you know, basically, they're Chromebooks with Windows, right? I mean, that's
yeah.
Yeah. So, go ahead, Mary Jo. What?
I was going to say, is the keyboard? I know you said the keyboard's pretty good, but I mean,
the keyboard's great. Yeah.
If you were going to choose, like say a Dell Venue Pro 8 or this.
Well, okay. I'm talking about the 11
for
or
two different things, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So on the Dell side, they have a 10-inch tablet. I find 10 inches to be a little small, tablet with a clip-on keyboard. Dell makes different clip-on keyboards. In fact, they make different hardware clip-on keyboards. Not like the, in other words, not like the type cover that we have on Surface. I will tell you that the keyboard on the HP Streams is better than the type cover. You know, so as far as the typing experience goes, it's actually better than that. The screen's bigger on the 13, and it's a real laptop, so you don't have to worry about that lapability thing. It actually works in your lap. So... Yeah. Again, it's a Celeron processor.
Depends
it's
only what you want it for. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But use it around the house. They actually get decent battery life. One thing I did do was I picked up, and I'm going to return it because it's such a piece of garbage, but I actually bought a $200 Chromebook that was on sale. I think the one I got was normally $300. So more or as expensive as the 13-inch version of the HP Stream. The big differentiator between the two is that on the Chromebook, it actually has a 1080p screen, which is kind of unusual in this price point. And I thought, well, this will be the one thing that kind of puts it over the top. But the truth is, that screen is kind of garbagey. It's got that kind of pixelated effect, and you move to the side, you can't really see it very well. It has to be at exactly the right angle, or you get like the kind of shiny effect or the dark effect on one side of the screen. That's an Acer, the Acer Chromebook that I got.
I have that one too. Yes, it's pretty. It's not good. But is that the one that's a touch screen? You pay for the quality of the screen goes way down on a touch screen.
It's a touch screen. That's a good question, Leo. Yeah. It's out in the den. I can't.
There's
check
one.
It
there's
out.
One. Maybe it's an Acer. I bought one that's with a Tegra K1 in it, and it's a touch screen. And boy, the screen quality really deteriorates.
I wonder if that's what it is.
You obviously didn't touch it much. So what would you get? The 11, the 13, and then I'm confused.
I would personally get the 13 because
13
of the size.
Seems like just the right size, huh? And there's a 14 too, right? Or is that a mistake I'm looking at?
There is a 14. It is an HP Stream. It's not the same design language as the way they put it to me. So the 14 was the one they had come out earlier. I believe that is a direct Windows version of a Chromebook that they make.
Got it.
Whereas the new model. Chromebook. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Should
new model
I get
HP
it
streams.
In? And you can get it. I'm looking right now on Amazon in Orchid Magenta.
Well, actually, you can't get Orchid. That one's sold
pink.
Out.
Sold out.
Yeah.
Horizon Blue.
I can't believe the pink sold out.
But this was another thing that they had done because retailers like Best Buy said, we really like the colors and everything, but could you make one in silver or maybe one in black or something so it's kind of normal? Mm-hmm. And HP was like, no, we can't.
Good for them.
No, it's not a touchscreen.
They know what they're doing. They're positioning this quite well. And we've mentioned before, you get the Office 365 for a year.
A terrible screen in this thing. It's awful.
Yeah. So you're saying the stream screen is okay? It's better than that.
Yeah, it's nice. I like it.
I'm so tempted to get one. I might get the pink one just to make everybody crazy.
You're going to have to wait, though.
Oh, it's nice. Yeah.
I don't think the stream is going to be part of the those 12 days of deals things that Microsoft is doing for the rest of the month. Yeah. So I think the prices you see now are pretty much as low as they're going to be.
And how about getting 3G in there? That's a Chromebook kind of a thing to do.
No, again, these things are aimed at a very specific segment of the market, poor people. No, they're aimed at people who are going to use them around the house. Like in other words, they actually get pretty decent battery life. I mean, I haven't rated them myself, but 7 to 8 hours. And but they're really designed to be used the way most of these things. This is not a machine I'm going to travel to New York City on the plane with. I mean, you use it around the house. It's the type of thing where it costs $200 or $300 and you give it to a kid and you're not worried about it because, A, it's actually pretty durable seeming and it's inexpensive. So if they drop it off a table, at least they didn't kill a MacBook. So, to my knowledge, there's no 3G, 4G option built in. But, you know, I think most people have a data sharing plan on their phone and they can just tether.
Yeah.
You know, but you're going to be at home. So you're going to be doing the Wi-Fi at home. You know?
Yeah. I have no need for another Windows computer, but it just.
I disagree.
It's so cute.
Disagree.
Where would I? What would I do with this one? Keep it in the.
I build little forts out of mine, Leo. I have.
You have tons of them.
Yep. Tent mode is very nice. That's why I build Fort Kickass over there in the corner of the deck.
Now we know what Paul does with his streams.
Yep. That's what I do. That's how I know they're adorable.
They are adorable. Every kid in the family should have one.
They are a foundational, Leo.
It feels like this is something Microsoft should embrace heartily. This is a segment of the market they haven't really had a compelling choice in. HP's done Microsoft a great favor.
Yeah, but I think this is the bone that Microsoft can throw to these guys because I'm not, you know, of course Microsoft will announce
it. You have this part of the market because we don't make anything in this part of the market.
Well, Microsoft makes the aspirational devices for now.
Yeah.
You know. They make the tablet that can replace your laptop.
HP has found that little niche.
Well, HP has made the laptop that can replace your laptop.
Right. Yeah. The Bingification of Office begins.
Yes.
Mary Jo Foley.
This is the thing. We talked about this on the show like literally a year ago. Microsoft showed off this demo where they said, hey, would this be cool if you had Outlook? And someone sent you an Outlook email and it said, want to have dinner after this and see this band. And in the side panel on your Outlook, you could see the venue, like some information about the venue. You could see the band, information about that. And you could see things like what's on the menu for dinner. And when they showed this demo, I was like, oh, yeah, that'll never happen. Well, it's starting to happen. It's in fact, today is the day. They announced that they're integrating Bing directly into Word Online, which is the web version of Microsoft Word. So if you're in Word Online and say you're writing, this is their example, you're writing a school report about Abraham Lincoln and you hesitate for a minute and you're like, wait, when did he die? I forget. You can highlight the words Abraham Lincoln, right click, and this Bing information card will come up in your document. Nice. So you don't have to go out to the search engine and search and then cut and paste the results and bring them back in. You know, this is going to creep out some people. So if it does, just don't use that feature.
I think people are used to it now because of Gmail and stuff that maybe they
As soon as I wrote about it, people were like, I don't want that. No,
well,
can I
turn
say
it off,
no
right?
This?
Can you turn it off?
Well, you don't have to click on it.
Just don't use it.
But you will.
It.
But that space will be there. Yeah. It will. You can't say.
You know what bugs me about this though? This will never be added to Office for Windows until the next version ships. You know,
next year.
Like they were on this kind of. They've been talking about like rapid release for a while over there. But on the client side, you don't see rapid release. Like you see mobile updates, you see mobile apps and stuff like that. But they just don't seem to be able to update that kind of traditional client. You know. Same thing with the Mac. Like, we still haven't seen the new version.
So where is this that I'm going to see this? Is this only on the web?
Yeah.
Yeah, right now it's only on the web. Okay. Although they're hinting they're going to be adding it to other web versions and not.
Is Mark Lane still working at Microsoft? The guy who did the Gmail man ad?
Oh,
Mark Penn.
Penn.
Yep, he's still there.
See, because
that's what I need. I got to get a poster on my door back there of Mark Penn.
I'm just wondering who's reading my mail so that they can fill this stuff in. Is it Gmail man or do they have their own man at Microsoft?
They have their own man.
They have to now kind of eat their words a little bit, right? Because this is the same thing.
Except the difference is you agree to this. Like if you want to use this feature, you are saying, hey, read the context of my document. Unlike what they say Gmail did, which is they're just reading your mail and sending you ads based on what's in your mail.
They're not doing it unless you say, I want to know more about this thing that I highlighted.
Right. Oh, you have to highlight it and then say.
Yeah, you're researching it.
It doesn't just pop up.
You highlight it.
No, it's not like a pop-up videos, you know. Did you know that Abraham Lincoln was born in 1860 or whatever? You know?
So I'm looking at the email, like, I highlight Abraham Lincoln, and then I right-click or whatever.
You know, 20 years ago, Microsoft would have IntelliSense the hell out of this thing, and it would have noticed you pausing and says, right. It looks like you're trying to figure out when Abraham Lincoln was born.
No. Okay. So you're actually sending it the content and saying, give me some information. Okay.
Yes. You're saying here, and what's interesting is, you know, if it weren't hooked up to all the machine learning and the Bing indexing service, if you highlighted Lincoln, it might not know if you meant Lincoln, Nebraska or Lincoln the car. But because it's seeing your context, it's like, oh, no, you're looking for Abraham Lincoln. So
wait,
here's only the results.
It's
about
seeing
that.
Your context. So it is looking at more than just highlight.
You know what? That's a good question.
That's fair. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, so it must be seeing your whole thing.
It's reading your mail, but it's only giving you a result of something you highlight.
It's not your mail. It's just your private documents, Leo. I don't understand.
Yeah, this is not your mail.
I thought you said Outlook.
This part is your... Outlook was the first example, but what they added it to was Word. Word online.
Got it. Yeah.
Actually, you know, the real reason this exists is because they described in the beginning of their blog post about this feature how hard it is when you're writing a Word document and... You can't remember when Abraham Lincoln was born, and you know where would I find that out? I guess I'll have to open another open a browser window and then type in some search query and go try to get past all the ones that are about Lincoln cars or whatever. The reason they're helping you from that little problem is because when you do that, you search with Google, you don't search with Bing.
Yeah,
and
that's
by
a good point.
Integrating it into their own product,
excellent point.
Now you're using Bing.
Excellent point.
Yeah. So there's anything wrong with that.
It's a way to introduce people to Bing, too, because you're going to see the results look like Bing, right?
Right. And you're going to say, as I
noted in my post, it's curious to me that this feature is called, what's it called? Insights for Office?
Insights for Office, yep.
Yeah. Why isn't it called Bing Insights for Office? Doesn't that sound like more of a
descriptive
name?
Maybe it's sometime.
If you look more and more about at things they're doing to integrate Bing into other products they have, they don't ever call it Bing. Like Cortana is Bing, right? But they don't call it Bing.
Right.
Bing is the name they use for the web search engine, but the underlying intelligence and their data repository and all those technologies that make Bing search on the back end, those things they are calling different things. Like the way you can do voice search with Xbox. That's really Bing, right? But they don't want to say, hey, this is Bing that's making this happen. Right. It's intelligence or intelligence search service or something like
Cortana
that.
Cortana next?
Yeah. Cool? I mean, Cortana already uses the same back end, which is...
Put Cortana in Word.
The weather here was so bad yesterday that my Cortana thing issued approximately 150 warnings about the weather on my phones. And I literally had to walk around my office and turn all of them off because they wouldn't stop warning me about how bad the weather was.
Wow.
So, you know, Bing powered. Wow. It's just big success. It was bad out. They got that right.
No, some people want that.
No, but it was just the sheer, in other words, you look down, weather advisor. Weather advisor. Yep, thanks. You know, it just never stopped.
Our show today brought to you by the good folks at ZipRecruiter. Here's a problem that anybody who's ever done any hiring, and this doesn't just mean your HR department, maybe it's you if you're a small business person, we know there's great ways to hire people on the web, great job boards out there, but how do you know which job board's the right job board for that particular person? ZipRecruiter will help you find candidates in any city, any industry, nationwide, because you post once and ZipRecruiter posts it on more than 50 other job boards with a single click of your mouse. I love this idea. Visit ZipRecruiter.com/windows and you can try it free for 4 days. That's plenty of time because the way ZipRecruiter works, you're not going to get phone calls to your office. You're not going to get emails piling up in your inbox. You'll be able to go through all your candidates on the ZipRecruiter interface, rate them, screen them, and hire the right person fast. It makes it as easy as can be to find exactly the right person. ZipRecruiter will also post to LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, and Google Plus automatically. With one click of the mouse, the best candidates are waiting for you at ZipRecruiter.com. And so is a free 4-day trial when you go to ZipRecruiter.com/windows. ZipRecruiter.com/windows. They'll even help you get make a page for your website, a job page, a career page for your company. That's why 250,000 businesses, including some of the biggest businesses in the world, have used ZipRecruiter, including our business. We love ZipRecruiter. You're going to love it, too. Find the right people fast with one click of the mouse. 50-plus job boards. ZipRecruiter.com/windows. Free for the next 4 days. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. We continue on with Windows Weekly. MDOP. I'm sorry. It sounds like I had Tourette's or something. MDOP. What is MDOP again? Remind me. Microsoft.
I'm going to let Paul do MDOP.
Oh, and man.
Doohickeys of presence.
The people that make MDOP are the one part of Microsoft that hasn't gotten a memo on the names of products.
Yeah.
Like, these things are
like BPOS. This is old school.
But it's BPO. It's application virtualization 5.0 SP3.
Oh Lord,
is the new release?
It's for IT, right? It's for IT.
Yes,
it's not.
I know, but it's insanity. Anyway, so Microsoft Desktop Optimization Pack is a suite of tools. It's available only to Microsoft Software Assurance customers. The volume licensing guys falls into three categories. There are, I think, seven-ish tools in there. Some are virtualization-based. That's, to me, is kind of the heart of it. Some of them are management-based. And then there's one called Microsoft Diagnostics and Recovery Toolkit, or DART, which is a restoration tool. That should be available just as part of Windows. That is an awesome
tool.
Do
you have to have an enterprise or a pro license to use this? Or can I?
Yeah, you do.
Oh, rats. Is this Intune?
No, this is separate from Intune.
Okay.
So twice a year, basically, there's an MDOP drop, if you will. And this version has updated versions of only two of the tools. So everything else is basically just carried over. And the two new tools are AppV 5.0 SP3, which is application virtualization, and UEV, which is user experience virtualization 2.1, which I think is the newest of the MDOP tools. It's only a couple of years old. And that's basically what we used to call roaming settings. It's basically the enterprise version of the setting sync stuff that you see in Windows 8, but much more involved and much, and centrally managed and so forth. So, it works like before. You get it from the Microsoft Volume Licensing Service Center if you're a subscriber. If you're on MSDN and TechNet obviously is on the way out, but if you're qualified for this release as the part of the length of your subscription, you can still get it. You can get it from those places as well. I've been saying for years, like, MDOP's great. It's obviously aimed at, bigger businesses because it's for Active Directory managed businesses and so forth. But I wish they made this stuff more broadly available.
I agree. I think any Windows user would love this.
Yeah, they do cool stuff around. All these things are cool. AppV does. They have like packages of apps, so you can do like virtualized apps just individually, but you can also do virtualized apps as packages. And so you can say, well, these three apps go together, so they'll be packaged together. They can interoperate together. They can have different settings packages for different user groups, so they will interact differently according to the types of users that are using them and so forth. They're really very involved, very powerful, very useful, and they're just they're just for the enterprise. So.
Oh, well. You know what? We were talking about subscription services earlier. Wouldn't this be a good subscription service?
Yeah.
Like, why not hey, anybody who wants MDOP, you can subscribe to.
I haven't kept up on this, and maybe you know this, but I have it in the back of my head that
there was
I don't think they do this anymore. Yeah, and here, right? I'm going to guess at what it was. So before the earliest versions of Intune included a per-user license for Windows Enterprise. And at that time, it was expensive, per month. It was, I think, $10 or $12 per user per month. As a way to reduce the cost of Intune per user, they took out that enterprise SKU. And so now it's probably $5 or $6 per user per month. And I think before they did that, you got MDOP as a benefit of having Windows Enterprise. But because now it's not there, I don't think it's available anymore to Intune. And yeah. I could be completely wrong about that, but that's how I remember it.
I know. I'm kind of remembering that, too. And you have to still, even if you're a software assurance user, you still have to buy it, too. So it's right now an add-on that you buy.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was.
Yeah, you have to subscribe to it. Yeah.
Part of the deal.
Right. No, yeah. Right. It would be a good subscription bundle, though, perhaps.
This stuff is so core, especially that Dart. The Dart's something they should hand out to everybody. It should be a sysinternal tool. It's so awesome.
What is it again?
I mean, they're all awesome in their own right, but...
What is it?
Diagnostics tool.
So it's a recovery. So you don't have a recovery environment in Windows, right? So this was a bigger deal in older versions of Windows. But if you go back to Windows XP, Windows 7, Windows Vista, they all had their own sort of ways to recover the OS. Dart works across multiple versions of Windows, which is actually really nice. And it is far more powerful than anything that's built into Windows. And nice. I haven't followed its developments possible in newer versions. It does things I'm not aware of, but... it's just the type of thing, like this kind of troubleshooting recovery tools kit should be available to everybody.
I think so.
I think, yeah.
I think so.
Still love the term dumpster fire, by the way.
It is. Somebody's saying in the chat room, it comes from sysinternal's ERD tool.
Oh, there you go. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe not surprisingly. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it does sound like a sysinternal. It sounds like a Racinovich. Yeah.
It does.
Yeah. Yeah.
And speaking of Intune updates for Intune this month.
Yeah. Yeah, this was very surprising. So last month, Microsoft rolled out a whole slew of updates to Intune, which is its mobile device management service that used to be called Windows Intune, now just Intune. And then this month, just earlier this week, they come out with a whole bunch more. And this is very unusual because Intune used to be something that Microsoft updated a couple times a year, maybe three times at most. And now we've had two really big back-to-back bunches of updates. What's interesting, most interesting, I'd say, in this December batch of updates is there are several things in here that are starting to let people manage the Office for iPad apps. So Microsoft's been talking all along about how they're going to let you lock down not just your devices, but also the content and the data on your devices, including your iPads. So you needed certain pieces to make that happen. And in these bunch of Intune updates, you're getting some of the management for Office for iPad and also a tool that lets you, if you have a line of business app that you want to run on your iPad, wrap it up. and you can use Intune to get that onto iPads and manage your iPads with those line of business apps on them. So if you're somebody who's been saying, hey, I've got Office for iPads in my environment, I want to actually keep users from opening up data that's corporate data when they're at home or opening up data that I don't want outside the corporate firewall. These are the tools that are going to let you manage that and lock that down. So check out those December ones if you're somebody who's thinking about managing Office for iPad devices.
These are the tools that try men's souls.
By the way, I just looked this up. I have half of the story on MDOP and Intune. 4 years ago, Microsoft did make MDOP available to Intune subscribers because those are the type of customers that wouldn't have software assurance. I don't know if the second half of it is, I don't know if that's continued. Like I do believe it was tied to that enterprise version of Windows SKU and that they no longer offer that. But again, I'm not 100% sure.
Can you could use these tools on a non-pro version of Windows if you had them. Like, can you put them on a disk or something? I mean, can you carry a floppy around with the...
Yes. I mean, so if you think you'd have to go on this a tool-by-tool basis. So the Dart stuff, absolutely.
That's nice. So all you need is
application
one
virtualization,
account.
Though. I mean, you're going to be...
Yeah. I understand that. It's not gonna,
you need a server infrastructure and all that kind of stuff, so...
And now we get to Fork U, the future of .NET. Two .NET stacks evolving along separate tracks. Sounds like a Robert Frost poem.
It kind of does.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
the
you guys remember...
Ahead.
This is what's happening pretty much. When Microsoft said they were going to open source more of .NET, they said, you know what, there's this thing called .NET Core, and that's a big part of what we're going to be open sourcing. What they didn't tell us at the time was their plan for .NET moving forward, meaning the existing .NET framework. It turns out that they're going to be basically forking .NET. So there's going to be the .NET core that's inside things like ASP.NET 5, which is the next version, and .NET Native. That's going to go one way, the open source way, and they're going to be on a fast track with that, rolling out new releases of that really quickly. And then what we know now is the .NET framework also is going to continue to evolve, but in a separate track. It's not going to get .NET Core, and it's going to kind of be out there maybe on a yearly basis getting an update. So we've been hearing already from a lot of .NET developers that they're feeling marginalized by this. They're like, hey, wait, is this going to be Silverlight all over again? What are they doing? Are they like putting us off in a corner so that they can kill us off at some point? So I don't know what to say on that. I'm not a developer. I don't know all the ins and outs of how this is going to work or what is going to end up going the .NET Core route versus not. We know that there's going to be Windows Presentation Foundation coming back and evolving in some way in the .NET framework side. But it, again, is this? I'm curious if this is just going to set things up for another divide like we had with HTML and JavaScript versus .NET when Windows 8 came out, or if it's actually going to get everything kind of on a better track moving forward in an open sourced way and help Microsoft with the whole universal apps pitch. I'm hearing from developers on both sides, some people excited that Microsoft has a plan and that it looks like there's momentum again for .NET, but also hearing reticence from others saying they've killed off a lot of technologies that we were building on top of before, and now they're going to kill this .NET framework at some point too. So that's why I said fork you. It's forked, and people are feeling like they've been forked.
All right.
How's that?
Okay. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Forked, all of us. More forks.
More forks.
This one is a Paul Theriot, I think, the fork from the European
yes,
Union.
Yes, although the headline is All Mary Jo.
She takes the blame, but you take the
heat. Yeah. This is one of those thorny legal issues. What's that?
It is. I said it kind of applies though, right? Because time it's Microsoft saying fork you to somebody.
I think I fall on Microsoft's side of the argument here. I mean, what they're basically saying is that the United States can't do an electronic seizure in the same way that they can't just walk onto foreign soil and take something physical. You know, just because they believe someone who they know the identity of has committed some crime. Doesn't mean that they can just seize things from them when that information is literally not physically held in the United States, which is the case here. And so this is that Irish email thing. We'll find out later. This is some incredibly serious terrorist or whatever, and we'll think differently about it. But I actually don't even know. Yeah, I'm not sure.
I thought so, but I'm not positive.
So this is actually, it's funny. This case is a year old now. Last December, Microsoft got this request to provide access to this guy's email, and they said no, and so they were sued, and Microsoft went to an appellate court, and they threw it out, and they've kind of gone back and forth, and now they've officially appealed the ruling, and they're going to fight this in court, I guess, and we'll see what happens. But I think this is one of those issues that the newsroom would be able to resolve in 60 minutes. But I'm curious how this is going to play out in the real world. I think Microsoft's right. I think ultimately.
Yeah, but I don't think they're going to win.
Well, they do. So it's funny. If you read their filing, they put the story in reverse. They say, imagine if a foreign government came to the United States and said,
That's happening. A Canadian judge has asked for server information from the U.S. and the European Union saying, if you have the right to be forgotten, you have the right to be forgotten everywhere, including U.S. servers. So I think we're in that situation where courts in other countries are demanding data from our servers.
Yeah, it's probably not a recent theory that the law takes a while to catch up with the technology, but the way things are moving ahead so quickly these days,
this one's a mess.
It's maybe more relevant.
But they're going to lose. I think they're going to
lose.
Really? Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. It's
maybe not. Maybe times
have
changed.
I could picture going either way. Yeah. Yeah. I don't think times have changed, but we'll see. I don't know. Well, when you think about just the national mood and people's feelings about this kind of stuff.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
It's not just Snowden and all that stuff. I mean, the stuff that just happened with the CIA and we've discovered, you know, how they were torturing people and who knew what and all the kinds of stuff. I mean, I think this falls into that general category. And I think this kind of thing makes people uncomfortable that we need to be better than this. And maybe Microsoft will benefit from that.
I think they have to fight the fight, whether they think they'll win or lose.
Yeah. Yep.
And they may, in their heart of hearts, know they'll lose, but still they're going to fight.
Well, this is also crucial for their business, too. I mean,
right.
If they lose this, there are going to be lots of people, but more important businesses in other parts of the world. They're going to say, well, guess what? we're not doing business with you anymore.
Even if it's in Ireland, we're not storing our stuff with you.
Yeah, we're going to go to bobsstorage.ie and
there's
start putting it
go.
Over there.
There's nowhere to go. Yeah. There isn't. Maybe you could go to mega.com.
Nice.
The new
or the piratebay.se.
Yeah. Oh yeah, there you go. There's one. Yeah.
I hear that's inaccessible.
Nowhere to run to. Speaking of inaccessible, Jeff's telling me that his Azure services have been down most of the morning. Have you heard about that?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No, I haven't heard anything.
We use Azure for a sales tool that we use that he wrote.
That's the first.
I mean, Microsoft's online services have had some issues lately.
All right, maybe it's just him.
Yeah. They were down in November. Azure went down really hard in November. I don't see on Twitter anyone.
Service
complaining.
Dashboard. I'm looking at the
Jobs page.
Here's one person complaining.
Partial service degradation.
Yep.
Partial performance degradation at West.
Maybe it's just 41 out here.
Minutes ago.
Just out here.
See Chicago.
It's raining. Chicago. Maybe the servers got wet.
Man, they got this giant grid of services on one side
That's
and
so
then.
Cool.
Territories across the top, but it makes it impossible to know how things are doing.
Right.
I know it does.
Right. And I know in Azure you can actually specify what data center.
Oh, he knows because he was telling me, oh yes, it's 1900 UTC and
yeah.
So he knew, but it's obviously not a global outage. It's a localized
outage.
Doesn't
seem like it.
Yeah, it's mostly all green, but there are some little trouble spots.
These things happen. I almost hate to report cloud outages because then you get the reactionaries who say, see, you can't touch the cloud. Give me that zip drive.
I mean, even with my own company, I'll say, hey, I got up this morning and I started moderating comments or something and the site was performing horribly. Could you do something about it? And then 8 hours later, they get back to me and they're like, it's working fine now. Are you still seeing
this?
What's
your problem?
It's like,
it's you.
Guys, seriously.
It's you.
Yeah.
Is Azure still down for you?
Yeah.
And more services are going down.
Yeah. Really? Huh.
HD Insight.
HDN?
It's not good.
HD Insight. HD Insight.
Yeah,
What? Hadoop? Hadoop can't go down on the show.
Not on this. Not on my watch.
Not
it can't.
Show. No.
Not on Mary Jo's watch.
No.
So we did something kind of new last week with Mike Elgin. You took Twitter questions, and now I see you have a slew of them. We have about 20 minutes left in the show.
All right, let's go quick then.
So just a few. You're not going to be able to do all of these, but I like the idea. But so do a few, and then in about 5 minutes, I'll interrupt, and we'll move on.
All right, I'll ask a few for Mary Jo, and then you can.
Okay. Or I can be the reader, but I think you need to pick them, so I'll let you do that.
Yeah. Well, I think so we got some surface questions. I think maybe the big ones in there are RT related, right? So with Microsoft supporting ARM-based devices, RT, will there be a Surface 3 RT or a mini Surface RT with a pen? Tom Grissom.
Yes, Tom Grissom asked that, right? Yeah. So, Microsoft almost came out with the Surface Mini last year. They withdrew that right before the launch was scheduled. And then they had already built a bunch of them and decided to warehouse them or whatever. I heard after that they were rethinking whether they should ever do any more ARM-based surfaces. Like they were really saying, did we get much out of having ARM-based? Has Intel caught up enough now that we don't really need the ARM-based ones? So I'm not convinced that Microsoft's going to do any more ARM-based surfaces. I've got one source who's a pretty good source who told me no, that from now on only Intel-based surfaces from Microsoft. But they have not said that themselves officially. So that's all we know. We don't know if they will. If they do any more surfaces at all, I would think they are going to wait for Windows 10. That would be my guess, because I would think they may want to take advantage of some of the new chips and some of the new under-the-hood capabilities like DirectX 12 that are going to supposedly give them better battery life and better graphics performance. So I'm guessing we're going to hear more about other surfaces, maybe not ARM, and maybe not till middle of next year with the actual launch of those devices.
Right.
What do you think?
What about upgrading existing RT tablets to Windows 10?
We don't know.
That's
right?
From,
we
that asked one that question. Came from at Therat.
At Therat. Hey, remember? Remember,
am
Mr.
I pronouncing
Therat?
That one right?
Remember at the Windows 10 event in San Francisco, I asked that very question, and they
that.
Said. They said we're
something hilarious that
make,
had nothing to do with what you asked.
Yeah, it was kind of, but the answer was kind of like, you know, our goal is backward compatibility and we're not committing to any specific devices. So they have not told us if you're going to be able to upgrade the existing Surface RT to Windows.
The internet is a series of pipes, Mary Jo. And...
He did. Then he danced around a little. Yeah, so we don't know. We asked. We don't know. We'll try asking again when the next Windows 10 event happens. See if anybody will say anything else.
Yeah. What else do we have?
Should I ask Let's you see. One, Paul?
Sure.
Yeah, turnabout's fair play.
Yeah, yeah. Since we've talked a lot about Windows Phone today, let's do another Windows Phone question.
Okay.
D. Newkirk 8 asks, with Windows Phone 10, what do you think will be the feature or features that will help propel adoption in 2015? Any guesses on features that might be really cool?
I mean, on the enterprise side, it's going to be two things. It's going to be the full enterprise mobility set, which they still kind of don't have. And it's going to be that compatibility across the stack. Same management tools, same apps, you know, all that kind of stuff I think is important. For users, it's going to be basically the same on the compat side, but it would just be the apps. I think the one app store, one set of apps that works across both devices. I mean, one of the you know, whether it makes sense or not, one of the reasons that people who buy an iPhone also buy an iPad is this kind of theory that I bought these apps and it will work on both, you know. And I think people today still don't get that the Microsoft's backend stores are really all the same, and that if you buy an Xbox video on your Windows phone, you can play it on your Windows tablet. You can play it on your Xbox One. I mean, I think people don't quite get that. And I think that by making these things one thing, you know, that will help. I thought $0 Windows phone licensing was going to help this year, but it apparently hasn't. So maybe that kicks in finally next year with Windows 10.
Yeah. Another good one for you. At Stan Zelyakov. Sorry, I'm sure I pronounced that terribly. Do you have any idea what happened with GDR2 and GDR3?
That's a question for you, Mary Jo, but I have.
For Windows Phone 8.1, are they still in the picture?
So this is update, in other words, update 2 and update 3.
Windows Phone 8.1.
I only have as a theory, and I think you can probably verify this one, which is basically that obviously, in fact, I was told explicitly when update 1 came out, and of course they called it update, right, to be consistent with big Windows. A lot of guys with Windows Phone didn't like that. And I was told explicitly there would be further updates. And I'm not saying there won't be, but I think right now with Windows 10 coalescing around this kind of mid to late 2015 release, you know, that they're kind of all heading toward that. You know, we know that on the big Windows side, you know, at one point they were talking, you know, maybe we'll do the start menu before Windows 10. And then finally they realized, you know what, this is all going to be one big bang release. You know, Office Mobile or whatever they're calling it. Not Office Mobile. They're not going to call it that. Office Touch for Windows that will work on phone and on tablets ship alongside Windows 10. I think everything is kind of funneling to Windows 10 at this point. And by the way, unfortunately for Windows Phone, the big fail here this year is in April, they released update 1 for Windows Phone. It's still not everywhere. It's not on Verizon at all. And there have been two major firmware updates on Lumias, one of which hasn't been released anywhere. You can get it on new phones only, Denim. And so originally the plan for that was by the end of 2014. These updates always take way longer to roll out than Microsoft expects or promises or whatever. So, I mean, the first couple of months of 2015, we still haven't seen Verizon ever put out update 1. And we still haven't seen Denim anywhere. And so I think that kind of stuff has to happen. So that's my guess. Is that anything close to what you understand it to be?
Yeah, especially on denim. I just asked last week about denim because I saw somebody saying it had been pushed back. But they, being the Microsoft folks, are saying, no, has not been pushed back. This is the firmware update, the second firmware update after Cyan. Right. Has not been pushed back. It's still being tested in selected markets ahead of the broader rollout, which will begin later this year as planned. So they're saying this year, we're almost out of year. But then they're saying it's a, it is expected to be available on all Lumia smartphones running Windows Phone 8.1 by early 2015.
Yeah.
So, we'll see.
I mean, update one still hasn't rolled out everywhere. That's the primary problem.
Yeah.
Okay. And this question from at Laporte. Mary Jo, it's getting darker and darker. Are you being submerged with snow? Has the snow reached your window yet?
No, but it's getting dark out.
Yeah. Wow. It's that time of the year, you know.
It is.
We're getting close to the darkest day of the year.
That's true. Yeah. And as we all know, it's always darkest
before the rest of the winter.
Rest of the winter.
In which case, it just doesn't really get much better.
I like doing this. We put up your on your lower thirds. We put up your Twitter handle. You don't mind if people tweet you with questions and thoughts and stuff. All right, and especially
with
Scoops.
My Twitter handle up. How dare you?
And yes, Scoops. If you have Scoops,
they can send that too.
Yep. At Mary Jo Foley and at Therot. Paul doesn't need a first name. Yeah. Everyone knows who Therot is.
Nobody wants his last name, Leo. Nobody.
You know what everybody wants? Snacks.
R-E-F-S?
Snacks. Oh, not R-E-F-S. Snacks. Nature Box. Deliciously wholesome snacks. I know Mary Jo's a vegetarian. Her Nature Box will be vegan for the holidays. Nature Box is the best way to snack. Don't go to that snack machine in the back or pull out something that's bad for you when you could have Parmesan. Oh, we love these. The Parmesan Garlic Pop Pops. They're popcorn kernels with Parmesan cheese and garlic. And the thing is, these are nutritionist designed, no high fructose corn syrup, no trans fats. So they're delicious and you feel good eating them. Let me just tell you what's in here. Corn, oil, sea salt, Parmesan cheese, garlic, onions, spices. Yum! Strawberry Greek yogurt pretzels. Somebody gave me a new Nature Box. I got new treats. Yay! That sounds good. Blueberry nom noms, whole wheat blueberry figgy bars. I always eat those up. The Lone Star snack mix. If you go to naturebox.com/twit, you'll see there are literally hundreds of deliciously wholesome snacks. And you can get them delivered monthly to your door. They have a variety of different box sizes. You can also specify sweet, spicy, or savory. And they do have a diet. They will fulfill some dietary needs. You can get gluten-conscious snacks. You can get vegan snacks. Never do they have hydrogenated oils, artificial anything, including colors, sweeteners, or flavors. No sulfites in the dried fruit. I like that. Those dried pineapple rings, it's just pineapple, nothing else. Don't forget, for every Nature Box you order, the company is going to donate a meal to help feed the millions of Americans who go hungry. In fact, their goal to donate at least 1 million meals by the end of this year. How would you like to help? Go to naturebox.com/twit for delicious, wholesome snacks for you and a meal for a person or family in need. Isn't that nice? Delicious, nutritious ingredients, wholesome and fresh, and you can get a sampler right now. You just paid the $2 shipping and handling, and you're going to get a delicious 5-snack sampler. Visit naturebox.com/twit. I have to warn you, they're addictive. They're so good. Start your trial today. Stay full. Stay strong. Start snacking smarter. I think Steve Jobs said that at the Stanford commencement. Stay full, stay strong, start snacking smarter. Naturebox.com.
It's not an exact quote, but it's close.
it's close, right? I think it was paraphrasing. I'm paraphrasing Mr. Jobs. All right, time for the back of the book. We kick things off with Paul Therot. He, as always, has a fabulous tip of the week.
Yeah, we're already on day three of this, but Microsoft is doing a 12 days of deals.
Yeah.
deal good, motion, I guess. Yeah, and they're really good. The today's deal is the Xbox One. It's a couple of different bundles, starting with the Assassin's Creed bundle for $349. But you get a free game for, you know, which is a $60 value if you buy it today. The thing that's kind of cool about these deals is that, aside from the fact there's a different one every day, is if you go to the store and you have to be there before, if you have a store locally and you can be there before noon and you're one of the first, I don't know, 50 people, whatever the number is, you get money off over the deal too. And so, for example, yesterday's deal was a Blue Win HD smartphone, usually $179. Yesterday's deal price was $129, but if you got into the store physically before noon and were one of the first, whatever number, it was only $99, you know, so you can get that kind of thing. But the special deal, and this is true for all months, you have to go to a store to get this. You can't do this one online. Is, remember we talked about that Microsoft Work and Play subscription, right? It was that kind of Uber subscription. Office 365 Home, Skype Unlimited World plus Wi-Fi, Xbox Live Gold, and Xbox Music Pass. The normal price of that was $199. That's a savings of about $225 over the normal pricing if you were paid for each of those services separately. If you can get into a Microsoft store before the end of the month, it's available for $149.
That's so even another better deal if you need those things.
Yep. Well, yeah. Everyone needs those things. That's ludicrous. I don't even know what that means. All right. So you've really thrown me off. So anyway, so that's good stuff. And then for the software pick, I actually have four. And so I'll just blow through these very quickly. Most of them are for Windows Phone, interestingly. But Minecraft Pocket Edition was released today for Windows Phone. It's only a couple of downsides. It's only for Windows Phone 8.1. So, again, Verizon guys, you know, you're kind of screwed there unless you get on the developer preview. And it's not, you know, it's not super cheap. It's $6.99, although I'm told that's fairly common for this kind of game. Here Maps was updated across – I'm sorry, not just Here Maps. I should have said Here Apps. Because it was Here Maps, Here Drive, Here Drive Plus, City Lens, and Transit were all upgraded across Windows Phone. Here Maps for Windows 8.1, just Windows, big Windows, was also updated. Am I missing something? Yeah. And if you've ever used these apps, you know that Nokia always supported something called a Nokia account. And there wasn't really much that you did with your Nokia account, but one of the things you could do with it was it would sync your map collections from app to app or to the web or to whatever. So if you created little collections in your map apps, you could access them from other devices. And so because they're transitioning away from Nokia accounts now, they have a Here account. And so if you've never done it before, you can just set up a Here account and do the same thing. Or if you had a Nokia account, you'll be prompted to migrate it over, which you can do. You can do it on the web. You can do it in an app. And so I did that this morning on my phone. So that's kind of cool. And what else we got? Yes, Office Lens was updated this week. Mary Jo was looking for the beer label support, but this one is business card support. And it lets you scan with the camera on your phone a business card, and then it creates a nice business card-looking kind of construct in OneNote. And on your PC or phone, you can then add that into your contacts. It doesn't do it directly. It'd be kind of nice if it went right into contacts. But I think that gives you a chance to look at it, make sure there aren't any mistakes or whatever. Works best with English. They've set up an account where you can share business card scans with them so that they can improve their algorithms and all that kind of stuff if you want to do that. And then finally, there's an app for Surface Pro 3. We probably talked about this a couple of months ago, called the Surface Hub app. And this is one of those modern apps. And the initial release only did two things. It let you program with the buttons on the pen do. And so the big one is that top button. And you can switch between having it launch OneNote 2013 or OneNote, you know, the modern app version. And then in the latest version of the app, they've added a third function, which is to enable or disable the Windows key, or the, I guess it's the Windows button, on the bezel of the Surface Pro 3. You know, a lot of people who are artists or just writers and they're using the pen on the device will hit that Windows button and it will go away from what they're doing and go to the Windows home screen. And if that's a problem for you, you can now disable that and using this app.
Nice.
That's everything.
That's a nice list.
Yeah.
We're going to put Mary Jo to work now with her enterprise picks of the week.
Yeah, my enterprise pick of the week is sadly an unhappy pick of the week.
Oh, no.
Yes. My pick is SharePoint Online. And the reason it's my pick this week is it turns out Microsoft has been doing away with some features of SharePoint Online without giving customers enough advance warning, or in some cases, any pretty much advance warning. People are finding out about some of the features going away through blogs from various MVPs or other people who keep tabs on SharePoint. And, you know, the reason this isn't good is Microsoft was kind of turning over a new leaf with Office 365 and its online services by opening up, having a public roadmap, for example, for Office 365, and trying to be more proactive about communicating what's coming, which features are being rolled out when things they had announced, they decided instead not to roll them out at all. They have a whole roadmap for that online that's public. Instead, now we're hearing scuttlebutt that they're going to do away with this, with a piece of SharePoint Online next that's called public sites. And that's the part of SharePoint Online that lets you stand up a public-facing website that's hosted on top of SharePoint. And, you know, it's a feature that not everybody used, but it's a feature that a lot of smaller businesses were using. And so far, they haven't said publicly whether they are or are not doing this. But it's sounding more and more from various bloggers and tipsters that they are going to do away with this and fairly soon. But they have not yet told customers this. They won't answer as to whether they are or aren't doing it when people are asking them. And I think the reason I wanted to make this a software pick is to, number one, warn people that public sites might be going away if it's something you're dependent on. And number two, to kind of poke Microsoft a little and say, guys, come on, you were doing the right thing. Don't go back to the old ways of bad secrecy. That's my pick.
Codename?
Codename? Codename pick of the week is Fairfax. Fairfax was the codename for a service that Microsoft calls Microsoft Azure Government Cloud. The reason I made it the pick this week is Microsoft.
That doesn't sound good at all.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? Because so many government agencies are based in or around Fairfax, Virginia, that's why that was the code name. And what the government cloud is, it's a version of Azure that's only for U.S. government customers. So you can be state, local, tribal, Department of Defense, any of those kind of customers. If you need certain requirements around Azure, like you only can have a data center that's operated by U.S. citizens, or you want extra levels of security around your data center, or you only want other government customers to share the cloud with you and no other kinds of customers, this is the offering that you would want. It has a whole bunch of different certifications and accreditations that people who care about government care about, things like FedRAMP and CGIS, FDA, HIPAA, has all those things, or at least they're on the roadmap if you care about having all those certifications in your cloud. And yeah, it became generally available as of this week. And Microsoft also said that in January next year, the complement, which is called Dynamics CRM Government Cloud, which is the hardened version of Dynamics CRM Online, will be available generally to customers as well.
Cool.
So that's your code name.
But really, the whole reason all of us listen to this show is for the beer pick.
Oh, not for the Call of Duty tip of the week.
Oh, look, you know what? That's a good idea.
No.
Call of Duty tip of the week. All right. How about beer instead then?
All right. Let's do a beer pick. So I made my beer pick this week, the Knee Deep Imperial Tanilla Porter. And I just got to try this on tap last night at Rattle. They had a California beer night here. And what was interesting was they had a whole bunch of Imperial Porters and Stouts from California, along with some IPAs, too, and other kinds of beer. But this one, I've had other Imperial Porters before, and I've had Vanilla Porters, which are porters that have vanilla flavoring. But this combined the best of both worlds, a really strong, delicious, chocolatey Imperial Porter with a touch of vanilla integrated into it, which makes it almost like a dessert. It was very good. Really liked it. Knee Deep is from California.
Is 10 proof high for a beer?
Pretty high.
Yeah. It's a porter, right? So it's a porter is going to be.
I would say from a calorie and carbohydrate perspective, this is absolutely a dessert.
It absolutely is. It absolutely is. Yeah. Yeah, I only had a sampler size taste of this, which was 4 ounces, but it was really, really good. Yeah, if you like porters and you've never tried an imperial porter, which is doubly strong, doubly malty and hoppy, and also if you've never tried a vanilla porter, I would say give this one a try if you can find it.
Why tanilla, not vanilla?
I don't know. I was trying to find that. Yeah, I like the name. I don't know why though. I didn't have any success doing a quick search.
It has like an Easter Island Hawaiian kind of vibe to it.
Yeah, look at the God on the cover.
I also like the commercial description, which I assume comes from the brewery, literally says, drink at your own risk.
Oh, nice.
Nice. It's always should be a warning sign to anybody, really. Yeah.
But this is a holiday beer, yeah. Kind of.
Or you might want to be in the house when you're drinking this one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was awesome. Good, though. Knee Deep Brewing, if you haven't found anything of theirs yet. They're in Auburn, California.
Oh, Auburn. Okay, that's up north. It's kind of near Sacramento, yeah.
All right. Very good. Really, really good beers from them.
All right. Wow. Again, we have come to the end of this show. It seems to happen every week this way. We talk for a while and the show
time
ends.
Elapses and then we're done.
Exactly.
But get your tweets in for next week, and we'll be back here Wednesdays, as always, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1900 UTC on live.twit.tv. You can also watch on demand after the fact. Just download it from twit.tv/ww or youtube.com/WindowsWeekly or subscribe in your favorite show catcher, and you'll be able to listen whenever you wish. But do
show catcher.
Show catcher. I don't want to say pod catcher.
It's like a dream catcher, but yeah. It's
shows
not
floating through the internet.
Quite as mystical.
And it puts out a little vibe and says, you, I want you, and come to me on your show catcher. Thank you, Paul Thurrott at the Supersite for Windows. A great place to go, winsupersite.com. Winsupersite.com. For just day in, day out, great Windows coverage, lots of tips, lots of information. You also can read his books, windows81book.com. Did you finish the music book?
Not quite. I'm actually trying to wrap up the band book first because it's so short. So I'll probably do that this week. It's very close.
Good.
I got bogged down in the Cortana stuff. There's so much. Cortana is so amazing, actually.
There's a lot going on there. Yeah.
Yeah. And you can literally do all of it from your wrist because there's a microphone on the band. And so you can just touch off Cortana anything, from the. It's fairly amazing. I say things like, text Stephanie and it will say, do you mean Stephanie
Which
throughout?
Stephanie?
Yes. And then, and then you say the sentences and is this correct? And then it is, but if you say no, it says which parts of it are not correct.
Wow.
Did you want to do, it's actually fairly involved. I mean, it's pretty impressive. Yeah.
You can also catch Mary Jo Foley at allaboutmicrosoft.com. That's where her ZDNet blog resides. And every scoop that happens first. At Mary Jo's blog. She is the queen of scoops. You could send her scoops as well.
You can. Anytime. Please feel free.
She loves those scoops. Thanks for being here, you guys. We'll see you next week. Stay warm. Stay dry. Remember, we're taking the holiday week off, so there will be no Windows Weekly on Christmas Eve. Fear not. Probably haven't told you that. We are doing a best of Windows Weekly.
Nice.
Okay.
Which will be a lot of fun. Some of the great stories and moments from the year gone by.
Cool.
And then there's New Year's Eve coming up. I can't believe it's just a few weeks off now. 3 weeks to New Year's Eve. Our show.
I have not booked my travel for this. I need to do that.
Book your travel. 3 a.m. New Year's Eve through 3 a.m. New Year's Day. I have the master list. This is every time zone in the world. I think there's 27 of them. And amazingly enough, we have people in almost every time zone. The only ones we don't are those pink ones. And so each hour, we're going to be Skyping somewhere around the world. We are looking for people.
What are you looking for?
I'll tell you. I'm glad you asked. we're looking for people. And you can go to twit.tv/NYE to sign up in the following UTC offsets, plus 12, plus 11:30. Plus 7, plus 6:30, plus 6.
Instead of reading it in bite numbers or whatever.
No, plus 5, Plus nine and minus 11. And I'll now tell you the places. Because it's a lot of places. It's a whole, you know.
No, I understand.
Fiji, Tuvalu, Marshall Islands, Norfolk Island. That might be a little tough. Thailand, Cambodia, Vietnam, Jakarta, Burma, Cocos, Bangladesh, Bhutan, Kyrgyzstan.
Cocos, the restaurant Cocos?
Cocos, I don't know. Cocos? What is Cocos? Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, Turkmenistan, and Pakistan. Alaska. Wow. I can't believe we haven't got Alaska yet. We'll get Alaska. Yeah. And then the tough one's going to be the last one, 3 a.m., New Year's Day, Jarvis Island.
It's got its own little...
It's a bird sanctuary.
Right.
Wow.
But that's pretty good, given that there's 27. We're only missing maybe 7 or 8. So it's going to be fun. This is going to be an amazing event. We're taking over the street outside.
Sure.
Hurricane permitting. And we have a mechanical bull and a jumpy house.
Oh, I've always wanted to go in a jumpy house.
Oh, you've got to put that on film.
Oh, I'd love to see Paul in his socks bouncing around in the
I would just
house.
Jump in and the whole thing would like on top of me. Like the Hindenburg going down.
Eric Duckman asks, is there face painting for the kids? I don't know. Maybe. You know what? They're not telling me a lot of what's going on.
Right.
Because they want me to be shocked and surprised when it happens. So it's going to be a lot of fun. That's New Year's Eve. You'll be able to watch. Everybody watch live. It's for UNICEF. It's for a good cause. We hope to raise a lot of money for the United Nations Children's Fund for children all over the world. Thanks, Paul. Thanks, Mary Jo. God, it got dark all of a sudden.
I know.
Someone like switched the lights off in Manhattan.
Yeah. Yeah.
Stay warm, stay dry. Happy holidays. We'll talk next week on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.